Hello and welcome back to the Next Step Podcast. I'm your host, Jarrett Sanchez. I want to thank all the listeners up to this point who have been with me this whole time and the others who have joined at some point in this past year and a half and who have caught up. I see downloads from all over the world, from Colombia to Israel to Ireland and Australia, all over the United States and Canada as well. So thank you to everyone who's been enjoying the show and who comes back. I've met some people that are listeners, and it's always nice to hear from those listeners. Hey man, when are you coming up with a new episode? You know, so it's nice to know that my little, you know, once in a while project is resonating with people. So what's going on with this episode? Well, this is one of two parts, and I'm really excited about this. I don't have enough time to really devote to the show. I'm sure you realize I only put something out every once in a while. You know, I wish I could take these two episodes and just really like put the polish on and just go all the way, full production value, all that stuff. And I don't have the time to do that. But let me just tell you at the top of this show that like the energy I have for these interviews is like very high. And to start with, I should say that this all was a result of my first foray into the real-world transaction with the Transition Town movement. Now, I've been engaged and involved in different ways online, obviously, with the Transition Town stuff, but back in, I believe, January of 2010, the Huntley, Illinois Transition Town Group, which is now the McHenry County Transition Town Group, hosted their first get-together meeting. And I haven't really been able to be active since then because I'm so busy, but I did go to that initial meeting. There was about 9 or 10 of us, all great people, and I'll tell you, it nothing replaces being in the same room as other people who already get it, who are already working on this great cultural project, and they all have a similar energy to really put a lot of work into this stuff. So I was at the first meeting, didn't, you know what to expect. I felt like I kind of talked a lot and sort of rambled a bit, as I feel I am now. But one of the people there, who also seemed to have quite an intense energy, although she was also quite shy, that person was Erin Tuttle. And she was a woman who lived in Aurora, Illinois, who lives in Aurora, Illinois. Now, you probably don't know the distance between Aurora and Huntley, Illinois, but it is quite a distance just to go and, you know, meet a bunch of strangers and you know, talk to them. So perhaps maybe it was a bit of a shot in the dark for Erin, but when she got there, like I said, there was a decent little group there, and certainly we all got a sense that, yes, this is a real thing, and we are working on this. And it was very wonderful. So Erin came up from Aurora, Illinois, all the way up there by herself, and two things I came away with from meeting her was that she has a very strong energy for this. She's very serious, very dedicated, and very she seemed very creative. And then the other thing that I got from her was that she's already working on an urban backyard permaculture garden, and that is just an idea that gets my mouth watering. Like, I'm so excited for this idea of people in the middle of suburban sprawl, such as Erin, converting their green grass into luscious permaculture gardens of food and just amazing loveliness. And I have met some people who are doing some kind of similar things, but it wasn't quite the same, and not everybody likes to be interviewed. Erin was not afraid. That's one thing I could say about her. As shy as she comes off and nervous and awkward, such as I am, she is not afraid to speak her mind and to just throw down them roots. So And that's what led to this episode and the next episode. I contacted her, we set up a time, and I got out there in July, and we did it up. And so you're not going to be able to see anything, which, you know, kind of is half of the experience, I guess. It would be nice if I could have brought a video camera and had somebody holding a boom mic, but you might notice that... I don't know, maybe you won't notice, but I was really excited the whole time. Like, I felt like I was just in a little slice of heaven in the middle of just, you know, suburban cultural hell. I mean, really, her family, they have a nice, lovely home, and it's in a nice suburban sprawl neighborhood. You know, it's typical stuff, cookie-cutter homes. But they have really done a number on it and transformed the whole outer area pretty much into just an amazing little Garden of Eden. And this is exactly the type of thing that I kind of think of when I think of these backyard permaculture gardens. Because, you know, you can see videos on YouTube of people out in the West Coast that just do amazing work, but they have very long grow seasons. And the Midwest just seems kind of dry and stale as far as this sort of cultural work goes. I mean, there's people doing stuff for sure, but it's just not, you don't think of it in a place like Aurora, Illinois. And so it was very much of a contrast driving the hour and a half or so down to Aurora, going through all these towns that more or less look the same. And in fact, there was one area of Aurora where I came to an intersection I could have sworn I had been to a few years before. And it wasn't until the ride home that I realized, in fact, no, I had never been to that intersection. But that intersection almost exactly resembled a different intersection in a different town about 150 miles away that I had been to a few years before for something. It was very clear that just the whole suburban sprawl thing is, well, it's a meme that replicated and became the monster. Let's put it that way. And it's very bland. It all looks the same, I'm telling you. It's so boring. And so driving up to the Tuttle household, they have a little bit of the side yard in between the houses on along the driveway covered in garden. And I was kind of curious about that. It wasn't intimidating. So you probably wouldn't look at this house and think, oh, they have a wonderful backyard permaculture garden. You would think, wow, they kind of have a lot going on there on the side, you know, and a little bit up front. But you get to the backyard, man, and it's just beautiful. They have a wonderful taste for placement and aesthetics. And so I was really, really pumped up the whole time. This was just like finally, like actually seeing this thing, this dream of mine, this meme come reality. I mean, this backyard permaculture garden is the thing to do if you can. So I don't want to ramble too much here, but man, I was really excited. So what you're going to hear in this episode is the first part of our day, and that was the tour. And again, you won't see the video. I will post some pictures on the blog, which I need to catch up on. But, you know, you're going to have to use your imagination a lot. But you get the sense of what happened. I've had people listen to this, so I know it's not boring or anything like that, I hope. my recording device really picks up a lot of the ambience of the outside noise. And she has a lot of information that she gives us. And, you know, so I might say things like, oh, what's this over here? And she gives a little description of it, and it doesn't match the actual experience. You still will get the sense of what went down and what she has going on there, enough to inspire you, enough to get you to see that, hey, this girl, this 20-something-year-old in the middle of suburban sprawl, her and her small family are doing this. And I didn't hear any complaints about it. Now, again, I was pretty excited, and it was very hard for me to stay in interviewer mode, even for the second part that you will hear, which is the sit-down interview we did inside. We discussed more of the philosophy and things of that nature that go into her project. So in all of this, you know, in all of my personal excitement, I kind of forgot to ask her some of the more key things, like, how much food do you get out of this? You know, how much work goes into this? You know, how many people can you feed? And so I was unable to kind of hook up with Aaron again to re-record, or I should say record some material that addresses those issues. But she did send me an email, which I'm going to read to you right now. She says, "I am not a numbers person, so I can't really give you an exact amount of food that we produce on our suburban farm," end quotes, "but I'll try to paint you a picture anecdotally. We usually grow enough onions to last the winter, as well as carrots, sweet potatoes, and sometimes winter squash. We blanch and freeze lots of tomatoes, herbal pastes, including pesto, and greens, chard, beet leaves, kale, etc., which feed us year-round. Last year was my first venture into fermentation when I made 2 crocks of raw sauerkraut. I am eating this almost a year later, and it's packed with nutrition and took no energy to make. The chickens give us eggs year-round, and the bees provide at least 50 to 100 pounds of honey each fall. We still buy lots of our grains, and I haven't quite mastered the world of legumes, which are peas and beans. Any meat we eat comes from a local organic farmer, and we have begun foraging for other edibles in the neighborhood, namely black raspberries for winter smoothies. We are by no means self-sustaining when it comes to our food, but we're taking steps little by little. As far as how much time we put into the garden, well, my idealistic self wishes that I could put a lot more time into the planting, growing, and preserving of our food, but the reality is that I work full-time, so any work I do in the garden happens on the rare morning, when I wake up early, or in the evenings and on the weekends. I am pretty busy and gone a lot, so I really don't spend a ton of time in the garden. The majority of my input happens in the spring, when I am seeding and transplanting indoors and planting outside. Later in the summer, I weed, harvest, sow late-season crops, and very occasionally, water. Again, I could be doing and thereby harvesting more, but I simply can't with my time constraints right now. Healthy soil and a good mulching system cuts down on time needed for watering, weeding, and fertilizing, and a good garden calendar keeps me on schedule. There is some labor, but it's a labor of love, to be sure. And let me tell you, for as much time as she doesn't have to work on the garden, they've done a lot. So, hang tight. We're going to get to the interview. Next, you're going to hear Beethoven's Ode to Joy with some sound clips from a Peak Moment interview with a permaculturalist in Oregon and also the author Douglas Rushkoff talking about corporatism. We'll see you on the other side. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the ride.
Is to create a great anti-corporatist movement, you know, to get our name on the website that's the one that takes down the whole thing. And that whole terrain of big things, that whole playing field is the corporate playing field. You know, the object of the game is not to create another big entity that's going to take down those big entities, but to get off that landscape altogether and start engaging with one another in small ways.
And I'm here in Eugene, Oregon, at a home, a suburban home, that's a demonstration of what permaculture is about. Jan is the coordinator of the Eugene Permaculture Guild, and we're going to get a tour of the whole place.
I moved in here 6 years ago.
Okay.
And my intention from the very beginning was to make best use of on-site assets. Okay. The sun, the soil, and rain in the 6 years I've been here. It's been a great experience. I cannot emphasize how much fun it is to do this.
So tell me, what am I seeing? What
there's
do we have
there's
here?
Multiple use. One of the primary ideals of permaculture is multiple use. To design is everything. When you design things right, they interact, they mutually support each other. And permaculture, you're kind of somewhat recreating a little bit of an ecosystem where you have little checks and balances, and there's greater stability when there's a greater amount of complexity. This place is a botanical garden, a virtual...
It does look it. It really does.
An edible botanical garden.
I would imagine that it's very satisfying, to watch this living system happening.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love it. Equally important to me is just an aesthetic place to live. If we lived in better designed urban places, nicer residential places, we wouldn't be so eager to jump in cars and try to get away from them.
Now, the beauty of a crashing economy is that the dragons are slaying themselves. The banks are asleep at the wheel. They are all concerned with their own survival. And as we lose our jobs, as we lose our investments, we're actually forced to start to look towards one another and ourselves for what value we can create, whether that's developing a local currency or buying from a community-supported agriculture farmer instead of from the Pathmark, whether it's figuring out how to make public schools better rather than earning enough to send your kid to private school. We are being forced to embrace the real world that corporatism really can never address.
And also another thing about suburbia that I'm working on. Suburbia is a land use form regrettable to say the least.
You know, the object of the game is not to create another big entity that's going to take down those big entities, but to get off that landscape altogether and start engaging with one another in small ways.
The amount of energy inputs to keep suburbia going is just beyond comprehension. The externalized cost on our culture, on our well-being, on community, the inputs that allow suburbia to happen is astronomical. We can't even. I call suburban renewal. Half of Americans live in suburbia,
all right,
and it's already here, and it makes sense to make the best use we can of what's already here.
Absolutely. We cannot afford, we don't have the energy to take it all down and do something else. We have to make work with what we've got.
That's right. Suburban renewal.
Would never be what I would choose, and I think my family probably wouldn't choose it at this point either, but we've just tried to make the best of being here and then to kind of be an example, and moving out into the front yard with the garden just a little by little has helped with that. The neighbors are like, what are you doing?
That's kind of a brave move,
right?
Too.
Well, yeah.
is this just ornamental then up front
actually,
here, this little spot?
I've struggled with this garden. It was awesome last year, and last year was its first year. So I've gotten really lazy in my way to do gardens. I used to dig everything up and till, and then I realized that tilling is kind of crap. And so, so now what I did last year is I laid out a sheet, an old bed sheet, and then just piled the dirt on top of it.
Right, and then that kills the grass underneath.
Right.
Yeah, I'm definitely familiar with like that type of raised bed design, and definitely I think people that listen to the show are familiar and friendly to that idea as well.
That's awesome.
That's all I'm really gearing the show towards is people who already get it and they're just looking for more inspiration and ideas, and hearing people's stories I think is the best thing. Like, you're actually doing this stuff, and that's what I can't do yet. I live in an apartment.
Which is part of the reason why I've chosen to stay here, I don't know if I would be able to stand it without being able to garden, and so it's a trade-off, no matter how you do it.
Well, this is just a little spot. Let's go to the main course. Got a track here.
So this right here is had some trouble with rabbits, so we have the fencing in, but this was our first attempt at a different type of lazy gardening. But I think it's smart. It's sheet mulching, right? So I'm sure you're familiar with that, where we started by smothering the grass with like layers and layers of newspaper,
yeah,
and then put different layers on top of that. So bone and blood meal, which are accepted in organic gardening practices, and mm-hmm. then straw, and then hay. So it's basically layering green and brown material on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then we topped it off with compost from the backyard compost pile. And most people say when you start a sheet mulch bed, you do that in the fall, let it compost for like the winter and spring,
right,
and then plant in it the following year. We planted in it the next day, and it was fine.
It was a hot bed.
Yeah, it was hot. Yeah, you're right. So we did run the risk of it heating up and not doing well, but it did awesome last year. This year it's been a little bit slower, and I think it's really because the rabbits, we lost our dog this past year, and so we struggled a lot more with rabbits eating things.
Okay.
So we're just trying to figure that out.
Hmm.
And our neighbor started fertilizing her lawn, so...
Oh.
But, you know.
Yeah, you can't really avoid what other people do so much.
So we stretched the raised bed all the way back here.
Oh, and if it seems like that I'm, like, staying really close to you and you're, like, kind of uncomfortable,
totally
some, you know, like,
no.
I don't know, some people like their space, you know.
That's fine.
Oh, you got a lot of straw here.
Yeah, so this is potatoes. And so basically, instead of digging a trench, I laid the potatoes on the soil and then heaped the straw up around them.
Uh-huh.
I used to grow potatoes in garbage cans, which
also
works.
Yeah, I've seen that idea, and I think that's really cool.
Does
that turn out well?
It's unpredictable. So,
okay,
like, one year you can get 5 really big potatoes, and the next year you can get 9,000 golf ball-sized potatoes. And so...
That's kind of cool,
it's
though.
It's fun, though. It's really fun if you're not depending on it.
Uh-huh.
We thought we'd really try to grow as if we needed the food, you know, rather than...
Yeah, yeah.
For fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, it should be fun regardless, and it is.
True.
But,
It seems that there is sort of a need to do things strategically like that and
right,
just kind of have that in mind,
right,
even if you don't, you obviously don't need it. It's a nice house. You guys
right,
aren't going hungry.
Right.
But
yeah,
it's just like sort of paving the way, laying down
right,
some vibe, you know, some energy
right,
people can pick up on,
exactly,
I guess.
And to me, it's also really important to do it in a way that's aesthetically pleasing and
yeah,
pretty. Not only because I like that, but because
uh-huh,
we live in the suburbs and I want people to see that if they did grow more vegetables, it doesn't have to be this utilitarian square that's sequestered at the back of their
It's a bit of an advertising
yeah,
job
right,
you kind of have to do almost.
Actually, yeah.
Like you have to make, we
yeah,
have to like plead the case. This is worthwhile. This is
right,
something we could and should do.
Right.
And look, it doesn't have to be ugly.
Right, right. And on top of that, just ecologically, it's better to have crops mixed in together. So
yeah,
you'll see it more in the background.
Well, that's you have a permaculture design background?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Not a certification, but yeah.
You've taken some classes
right,
or something, so
yeah,
you have more than me. I mean, I've read what there is on the internet and
well,
and watched,
you know,
some videos.
That's a lot of it, yeah.
But you have this real experience. Now, tell me about the bean poles here. I like the
uh-huh,
idea of bean poles. It's so
yeah,
such a key idea, just
yeah,
using vertical space.
Right, exactly. Vertical space and, again, just... I thought it was a pretty, you know, this is old.
Yeah, this is cool. You did this yourself then?
Right. I think it's 18-foot rebar,
mm-hmm,
and my sister and I just one day, like, you know, put it in.
Just manhandled it.
An afternoon.
Yeah.
But, so it's fun, and it is using vertical space, but
mm-hmm,
also, again, just trying to provide, you know, where maybe a lot of people would put in, like, before we did food gardening, we put in this totally useless shrub for your vertical visual, and so now I'm trying to explore ways of putting in edibles, you know,
uh-huh,
so not just
yeah,
edible shrubs, but what can you do with your vegetables too.
So what's down here, anything?
Not
is this
yet,
just going to be an
anything,
open spot?
I'm gonna
spot?
Plant some
no,
lettuce there this fall. But
okay,
the other reason why I'm struggling this year is I was gone for the whole month of June, so all the spring crops kind of suffered.
Oh.
And so I'm just trying to...
It's not as lush as it
yeah,
as it was
yeah,
last year or something like that.
It's been kind of a frustrating year, but...
Well, you know,
yeah,
you got a lot of stuff growing, so...
Yeah.
It's definitely not too bad, not too shabby. Yeah, I really like this. That's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I can't claim the... I got the idea from my friends, but...
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
it's fun. It's easy.
I can
to
edit that out, you know.
Okay. Just tell
so this is your idea.
Yes.
Wow. Cool.
My genius.
All right.
Yeah.
Which
I'm
way?
Go around the back.
Okay.
Only way to get here.
This is fun.
I'm
always really like awkward
it's
with
so nice
people
of you.
I don't know, but it's fun. And I think this is kind of cool because this stuff really kind of creates a common bond with people.
Right.
That
yeah.
Because it's not just, oh, I know about this stuff. It's like I have a certain urge or inclination
right,
for, like, a better world, you know. And
yeah.
And I see this as a very valuable
right,
and powerful thing. So
yeah.
I think it's a weird thing, like transition people, type people can just like pick up conversations. So
exactly, yeah.
That's cool.
We all have different experiences, but you're right, we have a common ground, and I'm by no means an expert, but I've been allowed to just kind of play, or experiment, I should say, and I'm the type of personality that before I really know what I'm doing, I just kind of dive in, and I really, I encourage that when I teach classes, I tell people, if you do anything, just do it, like dive in and start, and then you, you know, that's the best way to learn, so.
Yeah, and then start figuring everything out after that, but just get into it.
Right.
Yeah, I think a lot of people want to get the best start. Like, what is the best entry into this? And pick the right thing.
Exactly. And they do a lot of research. And I totally admire people who are good at research. But sometimes you can get bogged down in the research and never get started.
Well, you know, it's learning how to swim by reading a book.
Exactly. Right.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's continue.
I'll tell you about this part. Okay. It's not as much food here, except I did put a service berry in. It's first year, so it's just getting started.
That's that one with the yellow leaves. Okay.
Which is an Illinois native. This is a cultivar of the native service berry. But what I like about it is that it's not only a really pretty tree, but it gives you, once it's mature, it gives you loads and loads of these blueberries that taste a lot like blueberries, actual blueberries. But I think they're actually more healthy for you than blueberries. And if you can get to them before the birds do, you have a... You know, it's just always interesting that I used to work at a garden center. And people would come in to buy blueberry plants. And then they would spend all this money and time and energy amending the soil so that they could make the blueberry plants thrive in their non-native environment. Mm. And we have this native alternative that not only would give us food, but give local pollinators and... birds food as well.
Oh, and so, it's supposed to grow here.
Right, exactly.
it'll do well.
Right. So this section, for the most part, is Illinois native plants.
Very cool. Yeah, please do talk about this as much as you'd like, because I'm very interested in the idea of native species, and I know nothing. I'm very uneducated on a lot of stuff. Because like I said, you know, this show I can only spend so much time on, which includes, you know, fact-finding and research and all that stuff. So
native plants...
info dump right here. Let's just do this.
My favorite thing to talk about.
Cool.
The prairie plants especially have about 75% of their mass underneath the ground, and that's because they have evolved over thousands of years to withstand our weather extremes, prairie fires, drought, harsh winters, wind, buffalo, whatever.
So 70% of their mass, you're talking the roots.
Is roots,
They just throw down long and wide roots.
Right, and so it's fascinating, because if you have a year without a lot of water, they'll be short, but their roots will be thriving, because they keep everything important underneath the ground.
Huh.
And so it's always symbolic to me, life-wise as well, you know?
Yeah, but, right on. Well, and that's a bit different, too, than this mass-produced grass that's everywhere.
Which is
very
completely dependent on our care and our chemicals and our water. And so,
All right.
So one thing I work for an organization called the Conservation Foundation, and one thing that we do a lot of is travel to home landscapes and encourage people to put in gardens like this. And this is not mature, it's coming, but to put in a prairie garden... You're, not only inviting in local pollinators and providing food to our native animal species, but you're holding the soil and you're stopping rainwater before it leaves the property, which we have in the suburbs and developed areas. We have a huge problem with stormwater runoff. And as it's running off, it's picking up, pesticides and dog poop and whatever else, motor oil and heavy metals from our car brakes. And taking it directly into our streams and lakes and rivers. There's nothing that it goes through to be treated before it reaches our streams and lakes and rivers. And so if we can put in native plant gardens, it's going to catch that water before it leaves our property, then it's going to clean it up to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Not only clean it up, but help it infiltrate back into the soil rather than run off into the storm drain.
Yeah, and fertilizers is a huge problem for rivers.
Right.
It's a huge problem because then that helps all the algae and other plant-like material grow, and it takes all the oxygen out of the river.
Yeah.
I used to do some, help out with Friends of the Fox River.
Great. Yeah, so we work with them.
Cool. Have you ever met Gary Swick?
I haven't personally.
He was my teacher in high school.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a real cool guy.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get up and meet with him, and he's just so busy, and he just retired. So now he's like, here, let's get out of the way.
Here we are. Case in point.
where to go and what to do. Wasted hours that you make new and turn into a life that we can live.
Keep talking. If there's anything specific about any of these species or anything that you want to say, please do. If not, you know.
Yeah,
certainly.
I can say that one of the things that I like to do and that we do at the Conservation Foundation when we're suggesting native plantings for people is that, again, just like the vegetables, we're trying to say you don't have to turn your whole yard into a prairie. It doesn't have to look like a native prairie, because sometimes that's a little bit unkempt and people aren't really keen on that idea.
Is that like the impression a lot of people get from your guys' work
is
that you just kind of have to go extreme or nothing? Or?
I think sometimes when they hear the idea of native, a prairie garden or a wildflower garden, they think of kind of this unkempt wild garden. But again, this is still maturing, but you can kind of see that I've picked species that I think are less aggressive, and they so they kind of behave themselves and they look nice for most of the season, and then I planted them not like it would be in a prairie but in groups, you know, so I have groups of plants together. And
These little bugs flying around
so you can see that the you know, it's not just butterflies that we're trying to attract, but just any native pollinators that they're just buzzing around these plants.
That's so cool when you just stop and look at something and then you just see all this other activity going on.
Yeah, right?
Ferns aren't doing too well, though.
Yeah, they're not sure what's going on there. Those ferns usually just take off, but sometimes they compete with the tree roots, and so it's a little bit of a process trying to figure out what's going to do well there.
Well, what kind of, process of education have you undergone to learn about all of this?
Well, it's one thing, I just really like it, so I kind of geek out about it on my own.
Yeah,
but I
did,
I took a naturalist certificate program, certification program at the Morton Arboretum. And so it's a pretty good program. When I decided I wanted to get into this, I had spent, you know, nearly 10 years working at a garden center, so I knew horticultural varieties. But when I wanted to learn more about the ecological side of things, I realized, you know, that's not my background. I don't have any formal education in it, so without going back to college, the Morton Arboretum really offered a great alternative. And they have a pretty good program, and I came out of it feeling like I have a good understanding of local ecology. And I did a track where it's interpretation, so it's they kind of equip you to talk about it and teach about it.
That's
which
good. I think
fun.
Everything should be taught in that way, where you can communicate it directly back to people
in
a new way.
At least. Right, yeah. It's something that's really important to me, is to be able to spread the word, you know.
Well, and I'm glad you accepted my request to do this interview, because I have talked to some people who are doing somewhat similar things, and they're just not interested in really talking,
right.
like doing
and that's okay.
recording.
Some people aren't.
They're not very vocal and open like you seem to be.
Well,
so
I just hope I know what I'm talking about.
All right, well let's get to the main dish here.
Yeah.
This does look very nice, though. I like how you've arranged everything. It's just got a good balance to it.
And you know, I work a lot back here, but really once things are established, one thing I've done is I've, again, tried to incorporate the vegetables into the rest of the gardens. And so, but I've tried to like have an anchor of perennials and native plants that are just going to kind of hold their own. And once they're established and you can see there's not a lot of exposed soil, so there's not a lot of weeds that take hold. So there's not a lot of work that goes into this. And
see, that's a big idea right there that I don't think a lot of people have caught on to yet, like normal, regular folks,
right.
is that this exposed soil idea is dumb.
Right. And we want these garden beds that have like a little statue of a plant here and then space and a little statue of a plant here.
Right.
And that's, I definitely see
and expect
why
it
that's
to do
pretty,
well.
Right. But it takes a lot of work. And
I don't even know if it's that attractive, though, either.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
it just seems so regimented.
Yeah.
It reminds me of school for some reason. I think of these gardens with just rows, and it's just like, huh. But then, you see this exposed soil. Now, here, I don't, like you said, there's very little of that, and it just seems like there's a lot of stuff going on. You could spend a lot of time looking at all the various plants you have. I don't know how much recording time we have, but
I won't
a video
take you through that, but
I'm sorry, I don't know where you're getting to.
I was just gonna comment here, it actually looks a lot prettier at other times of the year, but this garden here is really not native species. They're some of my favorite shade plants, perennials.
Okay.
But I have decided to grow them in a way that mimics a natural environment. So it is what I was just saying, you know, they kind of blend together. There's not a lot of exposed soil. So that even though it is a grouping of non-native plants, it still doesn't take a lot of input. And so you can sometimes have your cake and eat it too when it comes to your favorite perennials that aren't, you know, really working for their keep.
Yeah.
So that's that. But I'll show you some of the vegetable areas.
Where's the chicken?
So the chickens are back in the corner. I keep them in the shade during the summer.
All
so
right.
I'll show you.
I've been looking for them. I'm like, where are they? I love chickens.
So about...
What's over here? This looks interesting.
Yeah. It's just this is one of the areas that I do a lot more annual vegetable gardening. So it is going to have more disturbance to the soil as I plant and harvest and weed. But yeah, we have cabbage and some Swiss chard and some beans back there. And
oh, that's cool. A little
onions.
Old ladder you use for the bean pole.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's one thing I really like about gardening is that I'm doing on a very limited budget, and so it becomes this creative process of what can I use to...
Yeah, it's so great. I wish I didn't charge my camera. I wanted to take some pictures, but I'm sure you have plenty.
If you want pictures, I could send them to you. So.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Cool. Very cool.
So we have a beehive. We have two beehives. One is... These are... Russian bees. These are Italian bees. These are more my mom's project, so I don't really know the difference. But we work together for the harvesting of the honey, but she does a lot of the maintenance and upkeep, and she could tell you everything about them.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've never really been around a hive like this, and it's a good thing I don't have a fear of bees, because I think right now I'd be freaking out.
Yeah, it is. It's so amazing, and I don't feel too comfortable. I do get closer weeding and stuff, but they start to fly into you, and it's their way of like saying, it's like almost like flicking someone.
Yeah,
it's like
you're hitting the barrier, buddy. Right.
And so there's been a couple times where they'll fly and then they land. And
so, I mean, we're used to thinking they are a threat, but you're saying that they're not as aggressive as we probably are just conditioned to believe. Because we've been stung as children and it was such a big ordeal.
Yeah.
And now we're like, oh, bees.
Right. Yeah, they're busy doing
but
their
But they're
thing.
Flying all around right now.
Yeah.
And I don't feel threatened at all. None of them have touched me or even come close.
Right.
So
it's
I'm just trying to pitch this here.
And it's so cool to
see how close
them.
I can get, right?
There you go.
If I get stung, don't worry. Wow, this is weird. Oh, wow, that is so cool. You just get a sense of they're like, what? Yeah, see, I just had one hit me in the head.
Yeah.
That's enough for me. That's so cool, though. All right.
So several years ago, probably three summers ago, I decided that I didn't want any lawn anymore in this area. So My family is so nice. They all, my sisters, my parents, my sisters' boyfriends, you know, friends, we all kind of rallied. And in a weekend, we covered this whole space with, but what we did is we decided, where are you going to walk in the day? So I figure I want to go from the back door to the chicken coop. Mm. And then I want to go from the chicken coop to the compost pile. And so you put your pads in, and we covered the pads with cardboard and mulch. And then the negative spaces became the gardens. Mm. And so these are raised beds, but I decided that the raised beds didn't need to be in a square. You can see back there we have some squares. Those have been there for quite a while.
Okay.
And I've kind of evolved into letting the raised beds be more organic.
You know, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I really am. Like, yeah, it's nice, and it kind of helps keep everything together when you have those barriers, but there's just something very, obviously organic,
yeah,
but something just, it seems you connect more with.
Yeah.
When it's just
right
there.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel. So.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, like you can see, there's a lot of flowers in with the vegetables, not only to give beauty, but to attract beneficial pollinators, mm-hmm, you know, to the flowers and the vegetables. And to what you're really trying to do with your garden is to create a community. So there are all these unseen relationships and things that I don't even know, or even a, you know, trained ecologist, mm-hmm, probably wouldn't even know that's going on, you know, relationships between the things flying in the air and the things growing in the ground, and then the organisms living in the soil,
yeah,
and all these relationships that are chemical and physical,
and it's
really
synergetic.
Cool. Exactly.
It's not just a mechanical process.
Right.
This is like, hey, this is a party.
Right.
This is it.
Yeah. So one thing
these are jamming.
One thing that I do is I never till my soil, right?
Uh-huh.
And so every fall, I collect leaves that the neighbors are hauling off their property. I take them and then I run them through like a little electric shredder that I have, and then top dress my beds. And then in the spring, I just plant right through that. And so
cool.
it's mimicking again what's happening in, uh-huh, nature when the leaves fall. And that's all the tilling and amendment that natural soils get. And so why shouldn't our gardens be just the same, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
well, and when you till, you're disrupting a lot of that.
Exactly.
You know, small organismal life that's in the soil.
Yeah.
So soil health, building healthy soil,
right,
that's a key idea,
right,
a key concept.
Right, and it's well-intended, the whole idea of plowing. We're trying to, you know, cut down on weeds and add oxygen and add,
right,
organic matter and nutrients, but it's doing it at a rate that the soil's not ready to take. You know, it's doing it at an unnatural rate.
And I think a lot of people haven't asked the question, is this the best way to,
right,
do that, to,
right,
do what we need to do?
Right. It was
we
surprising
kind of
to me to find out that it's not the best way, you know?
Huh.
So
right,
we can talk about chickens.
Yes, the chickens.
My favorite part.
This is really why I came here. If you didn't have the chickens, I would have thought twice.
So these are the girls. I have three chickens. I've had anywhere between 3 and 4, which is about the right size for a family. We can go in there if,
yeah,
you want to.
Oh, yeah. I'm like a kid with this kind of stuff. This is really what I just want to be surrounded by, is this organic permaculture
know,
type
it's so
stuff.
Fun,
you know?
Isn't it?
Yeah,
it makes
it's real
us
cool.
All into kids.
I wonder if I can get them to talk. What do you think about the oil spill? All right, I'm going to freak them out.
So, the red one is a Rhode Island Red. The black ones are Black Sex Links, which is a mix between Rhode Island Reds and Barred Rocks.
Okay.
And they've been, they're not really, I don't think they're like an heirloom variety. They've been bred to lay eggs consistently all year round.
Oh.
And so, so we get eggs. They go through a lull when they're going through their molt in the spring and the fall, but they lay all through the winter and all through the summer, and in fact,
there's
two eggs in here.
Oh, cool.
So they're pretty private when they lay their eggs. They like to go into a dark spot.
Huh. That's a pretty simple setup, too.
Yeah, right? It's an old compost bin that never really worked for composting, at least with my lazy ways. And so the chickens kind of adopted it.
Cool.
And
that's awesome.
They go in this little door and...
That's so perfect.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, the only other person I've talked to that had backyard chickens, they had like a... He had built a coop. And it was pretty,
yeah,
sweet, but it seems like this is really easy.
Right.
And kind of,
well,
accomplished
I do
similar
have a
function.
Coop, which is, I'll show you the coop here.
Okay.
Which, you know, I'm not a builder.
No carpenter, are you?
So if I were to do it over again, like I said, I just dive into things really sometimes without making a good plan. Mm-hmm. And so we made this coop out of repurposed wood, and it's old fence wood that we got for free. And it's probably not the best wood to use because it's soft and it was already very weathered. It's probably been chemically treated, so yeah. I would probably do some things differently now, but it's worked out well, and it's very safe for them at nighttime because you're always contending with raccoons and possums, and I've had one chicken death to a possum.
Oh, man.
And then during the day, there's always the hawks and neighborhood cats and dogs. So
hawks will come down? And
Yeah, and chickens, you know, I've always thought of them as so helpless. You know, they're completely dependent on us to keep them. But one thing I realize that they have is their voice. And so I'll be in the house, like, all the way at the other side with all the windows closed, and I'll hear this, and I know that the hawk is watching them. And
that's great.
I'll come outside.
That's cool.
And, yeah.
So they just got louder.
Right, right.
They're not tough, but they're
loud.
They
have this alarm system. So,
neat.
So I'll show
cool.
you the coop.
All right.
It's not cool. the easiest thing. I really, again, sometimes I err on the side of aesthetics, so I wanted it to look like an old outhouse. So
that's what I kind of thought. I was like, are they going for the outhouse look here?
So it's tall and narrow, and it's probably not the most comfortable things for they are totally fine, but they get in, they have to jump up one level and then jump up another level. And
is that difficult for them? I know that they can scoot pretty well.
They're fine. Yeah. The red one's, she's about 4 years old now. Most people don't keep chickens that old. They probably harvest them for meat before then.
Huh.
But I'm kind of attached to her, so
imagine.
It's a little harder for her to do the jumping, but but they do fine, and they're safe in here, which is the most important part, you know.
So do you put them in here at night, then?
At nighttime, yeah. Actually, they put themselves to bed at nighttime. When it gets dark, they'll make a beeline for this and
I
hop
wish
up.
I wish my sons would do that.
Right.
Maybe if I build them a coop.
Build them a chicken coop, and they will love it.
We need new hay, Dad. No. Not in the budget. Cool. Yeah, it is real cool. I even got a little bee's nest in there.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's awesome.
Some spiders.
Yeah, that might be something I want to... That could actually be, those almost look like, no, those are probably wasps.
Yeah, they look like, I don't think they're
escaped from the hive, but.
No. They don't have as bulky of the body.
Right.
And, yeah,
so
these, you can tell.
This area here is all natives as well, and there's a big storm drain culvert, or whatever you would call it, right in the middle of this.
Oh, cool.
And we thought, let's intercept that water before it runs off the property. And so we planted a lot of the things around the culvert are kind of water-loving species. Let's get out of the bee area.
Yeah, I'm going to shade. Well, that's cool.
So that's, that's the yard. I don't know. What other questions do you have?
I don't know. What's over here?
Okay. This is an area, I think I told you, where we started out with these square raised beds.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I, you know, honestly, I kind of like square raised beds because they're contained.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I really just, I like order.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's nice to just put things in patches. But again, they're not tilled. They are always amended from the top. And I do a lot of kind of intensive successive planting. So I just cleared out what this ground tarp is covering areas that I've just seeded for fall crops, so some lettuces and some beets, some things in the mustard family, like some kales, that will hopefully give us some turnips, some food for the fall. And one of my favorite tricks is to plant carrots and radishes together, because carrots take a long time to germinate, and a lot of times the soil will crust over before they have their chance to germinate.
Uh-huh.
So if you mix the seeds in with radishes, the radishes will, they germinate really quickly, like in 36 hours, and then they're harvested pretty quickly as well. And so they'll do their thing, and they'll keep the soil, you know, from crusting over while the carrots are germinating. And then when you harvest the radishes from amidst the carrots then are ready to go. And so in that furthest bed, you can see where those kind of wilty, those are parsnips, and I just pulled the radishes out from them today. So it'll take them a day or two to, like, regain their ground, and then they're ready to go. So
that's awesome.
It's kind of a fun I also learned that from a friend, so I can't claim it. But
well, you know, it's all about sharing ideas. And that's
exactly
what, another really cool aspect to me of permaculture and this kind of mentality is you can really design this whole thing to work together to all advantage of all.
Right.
All the different species you have growing can be complementary in some way.
Right.
And that's such a huge idea. I feel like I should know so much more about this, but
well, you will.
Again, it's it's also something, you know, kind of have to have the space to do it.
Right.
Otherwise, you're just collecting data.
And yeah.
It's not necessarily the best way.
Well, an interest in it and, you know, reading about it is better than nothing, you know?
That's,
so,
well, that's absolutely true, for
prime
sure.
Prime the pump when you do have land.
Yeah. And I say that you've done pretty well here because you still have some lawn.
Right.
So you still have something that, that breathes normality to people.
Sure, right.
But at the same time, you have that eye for aesthetics that has allowed you to create something that's also pleasing to the eye, even though it's not normal.
Right. I hope so, yeah. It's really
fun, cool.
And it feels like a almost like an artistic expression. You
yeah,
know?
Absolutely.
And it's definitely not perfect, and we have a lot to learn, but it's a lot of fun. I also realize how much space you have, you know? I mean, we have these three raised beds, and then there's a fence. And last year I realized, well, there's all this space between that final raised bed and the fence. Why should it just be space, you know?
Right.
And so this is, what would you say? This like an eighth of an acre, less than that.
It's a normal
small.
Size suburban backyard.
Yeah. And there's so, I would say probably it's smaller than some I've seen, but there's so much space to grow things. And little by little, I'm taking out some of the, you know, ornamental plants that I don't really want anymore, and I'm replacing it with edibles. And so there's just so much more that could be done. And gosh, there's a whole front yard that is right for the taking.
Well, nature's way, it seems to be to take over everywhere and just keep going.
Right.
So,
so that's the plan.
Yeah, this is so cool.
Well, thank you so much for coming out. It was really nice of you.
Well, like I said, you know, it's this is part of just this bigger thing that we're all sort of like tapped into, this bigger idea. And more that we can make these connections and show that not only is it possible, not only is it like really doable and feasible on a low budget, but there's something else going on here. There's a higher, you know, intelligence at work.
Yeah,
there's something that can really pull you out of your normal way of looking at the world.
Right.
And I mean, just this is a metaphor. It's the idea that we can really design the earth in a way that works for us and the earth.
That's an interesting debate, as I think a lot of times environmentalists would, or just anybody who's trying to, you know, idealists, maybe I should say, is to say that, well, you know, we should have areas that are just not touched at all by human hands, and to restore things back to the way they should be would mean that humans kind of withdraw completely, and that's not feasible.
Well, it's kind of like going in the opposite direction.
Or not even right,
like, it just seems there's a fallacy there somewhere.
And so I think that's why I like permaculture so much, is that it allows for us to learn from those untouched wild areas and then mimic that in our cultivated areas. And you're really kind of, you are in some ways, I shouldn't say making the earth work for you, but you're allowing it to work for you, you know, and then you're serving it in return, you know, like you're almost redeeming the soil and the land and the communities, and and the redemption comes from incorporating them into human communities, you know, and so there's something really like beautiful about a relationship between humans and the earth, and that cultivation and that space in between the two.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. It's almost spiritual, yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Cool. Well, do you want to go inside and maybe do a little sit-down interview?
Sure, yeah.
And kind of just... I'm not afraid of the dark.
right, and that wraps up the first of two parts with Aaron Tuttle. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I certainly did, both in being there actually on the ground with her and talking to her and also editing this stuff. I mentioned before that we're going to be doing an inside interview also, and that's what the second episode is going to consist of. And that's where, instead of focusing on the, you know, outside practical work she's doing with the gardens, we're going to talk more about the inner work, the, you know, philosophical and spiritual aspects of doing this type of a thing in the middle of suburban sprawl, Illinois. So please don't miss that, because it's certainly the complement to this episode. And I assume it's going to be out within a few days, maybe a week of this one airing, if you're listening to this in somewhat real time, relative time. So yeah, look forward to that. It's not going to be the normal lag time that seems to appear on the show. I already got the other one brewing, guys. Don't worry, it's coming. So yeah, look out for that. A couple credits here. At the top of the show, you heard me talking, introducing this episode, and in the background was the Soft Machine playing their song, Always Slightly. I think that's what it's called. Slightly All the Time. I stand corrected, or I sit corrected. So the Soft Machine, Slightly All the Time, was the jam you heard at the beginning. And then during Beethoven's Ode to Joy, you heard clips of Douglas Rushkoff once again. This was taken off of YouTube. He did some short clips for his most recent book, Life, Inc., which I haven't read the entire thing, but I've read many pieces of it and heard many of his interviews given while doing the publicity tour for Life, Inc., and I highly suggest that book, even though I haven't read it all. It's good stuff. Douglas Rushkoff, his work, I would suggest altogether, but certainly his book, Life, Inc., and also Coercion. That's one I read many years ago. It's great, great book. So that was Douglas Rushkoff talking about corporatism and why all these mass movements really fail to really hit the mark. Why we got to bring it down to the community level. And the other clips you heard underneath Beethoven's Ode to Joy was from the show Peak Moment, which is something I watch on YouTube every now and then. And even if you're not into the whole idea of peak oil, like, that's not one of my big things, believe it or not, but, I mean, you know, I recognize it. It's a great show. Peak Moment is a great show. The host, Janaea Donaldson, she's just goofy, you know, she's more old school compared to my generation. And they focus a lot on, you know, their guests focus on practical stuff. So it's not all just talking about ideas, which is necessary, but, you know, it's people, you know, doing things too. And the guest was Jan Spencer, who is Eugene Permaculture Guild's founder out in Eugene, Oregon. And all I have to say, anybody listening from Oregon, you know, props, namaste, cheers, whatever. Oregon, everything I hear about it, man, it just sounds like the kind of state I want to live in. I have some family up there somewhere, and man, if ever I get the chance, I'm coming, because I'll tell you what, it just seems to be happening up there. So big shout out to all you Oregonians, or however you the hell you say it. I don't even know. So yeah, that other those other clips came from Jan Spencer talking with Janaea Donaldson on the Peak Moment show, I guess you could call it. Yeah, it's a great show. Check it out on YouTube. And let's see, what else do we have here? Oh yeah, the song that I played was Wasted Hours by Arcade Fire. There's a band that I probably normally wouldn't listen to, but they just came out with this album recently, The Suburbs, and the music just kind of caught me, and I like the singer too. But then once I started listening to the lyrics, I really, really enjoyed them, and I think they're pretty relevant for, well, certainly for this episode, but a lot of the lyrics on their album, The Suburbs, are just relevant for these times, for those of us who are growing up and living in these suburbs, you know. It's just, it really speaks to that kind of soulfully desolate experience. Does that make any sense? Soulfully desolate? I don't know. But Yeah, that's Arcade Fire with Wasted Hour. So that was the song that I played. Other than that, you heard the wonderful Aaron Tuttle. And, I didn't think of it at the time, but after editing this, I realized I didn't get a close-up sound of the beehives, and that would have been a really cool sound bite for you guys. So, even though you didn't hear it, the bees were there. All right, that's enough out of me. You guys take it easy. Oh, and if there's one more thing that I could ask you to take away from this podcast, it's for those of you who happen to find yourself living in an actual home with a backyard or some area to grow food, and if you're not already, just go outside and go out there and look at it and just kind of soak it in, that space, that green grass area, and just imagine what it might be like if you turned it into, well, a small permaculture garden, for instance. Or even just a small, normal, regular garden plot, hopefully organic, hopefully no-till. But just picture it, if you haven't started it already. Just go out there and take a look around. Think about what would it look like. All right, folks, take it easy. Take care of each other. I'll see you next time. Like I said, it'll be a lot quicker than usual. Namaste. That's it. That's the wrap.